day, and welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. A few years back, it was one of the most shocking discoveries we've ever had here in Detroit. 11,000 untested rape kits were sitting in a Detroit Police Department storage room. Some of them had been there for more than 20 years. They were finally unearthed in 2009, and that's when the monumental task of testing and clearing that backlog began. That work wrapped up more than a decade later, and the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office announced last year that the entire backlog had officially been cleared. There were two people who were really instrumental in that process, and they were recently recognized by the Museum of the Courageous. Earlier this week, that museum announced this year's Courageous class to celebrate, quote, historical and contemporary courageous acts that have stood up to hate and shifted our country toward justice. Two of those recipients join us now to talk about their work helping to clear Detroit's rape kit backlog and to demand justice for survivors. Kim Worthy is the prosecutor here in Wayne County, and I'm glad to have her with us. Kim, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Good morning.
And Kim Trent is a Detroit-based activist and communications consultant. Kim, welcome back to Detroit Today as well.
Good morning, Stephen.
Yeah. So first of all, congratulations to you both. I know how long and how hard you have worked to address this issue since it was unearthed. And I know that it wasn't just a matter of processing through all of this, that there was a lot of struggle that had to be mounted in order to get all of this done. But I want to start here. I want to go back to the time when we started all of this, when we discovered all of these kits untested and sitting in this storage department. What it meant to you to kind of take on this massive and important task and to decide that, hey, we needed to clear this backlog to give some semblance of justice to the survivors. Kim Worthy, I'll start with you.
Good morning again. Let me just clarify something that you said in your opening. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we announced 2 years ago that the kits had all been tested. We're not completed yet. We still have a lot of cases to go through, a lot of cases to investigate, but our testing of all the kits was completed 2 years ago. So I just want to clarify that.
Yeah,
we're still
sure.
Working on this whole thing.
Right.
It means quite a bit. You have interviewed me. In fact, you did one of the first comprehensive interviews on the subject back in 2009. That aired on television, and that was great, and it actually jump-started a lot of our fundraising efforts, and you really helped contribute to that, so I do want to just give you a shout-out for that, and I appreciate that. Very few journalists were doing that at that time.
Mm.
This was a travesty. Being a sexual assault survivor myself, it hit home, although I have to say I would have taken the same action even if I had not been. These women, we later found out, that were involved with these rape kits, whose rape kits sat on a shelf for all these years, 86.3% of them were women of color, which just brings into focus another issue when women of color are sexually assaulted. Their cases are not taken seriously. So that was an additional motivator. But frankly, I just wanted to make sure that all these women had a chance at justice.
Yeah.
And really, that's all they were asking for. And I didn't want them to be an ignored part of the criminal justice system. I wanted them to believe again in the criminal justice system after they were so shoddily treated. So those were the motivations.
So also, let's remind listeners of how and why this happened. I mean, this idea that these rape kits were discovered in this storage room at DPD, it doesn't make sense on its surface. The purpose of doing the kind of testing and investigation that produces a rape kit is intended to lead to some sort of other action, some sort of charging or at least identifying of a perpetrator. So remind us, Kim Worthy, of how we got here.
Yeah, there were many reasons. Later, as you're well aware, we had a paid study that was done by a researcher in this area. named Rebecca Campbell from Michigan State, and she identified many reasons for it, chief among victim-blaming culture. A woman of color or a woman walks into a police station to report her sexual assault and is laughed at, scoffed, maligned, literally, back then. And, you know, they try to talk her out of reporting. So just rampant victim shaming and blaming. There were also, you know, 9 changes of police department leadership at that time. Each chief had their own agenda. So sexual assault wasn't taken seriously at that time either. And, you know, a lack of training, a lack of compassion, a lack of resources. So just a number of issues were identified. But again, chief among them were the victim blaming and shaming culture. They try to talk them out of it. And I tell people all the time, if you walked into a police station to report a carjacking, no one would laugh at you. Mm-hmm. No one would malign you. They would immediately take you seriously, and they would believe that this happened to you and you're going to report it to the police. Just the opposite for a woman reporting a sexual assault at that time.
Yeah. So Kim Trent, this is Prosecutor Worthy's job, of course, to pursue these kind of things and try to make them right. For you, there was a more personal motivation to get involved. Talk about what made you feel like this was not just important, but a calling, really, to action.
Well, you know, there were actually a few things that motivated me. Certainly the victim blaming. I mean, I am a sexual assault survivor, so just knowing the reasons that I did not report my assault, a lot of it is because of the culture that existed then and still we're still grappling with today that does blame survivors, that does question their motives, that you know, as Kim said, if there were any other crime, no one would be asking questions. And so that, which was kind of writ large at the time because of, you know, certain celebrities who had been accused of, you know, I just saw a lot of traffic on social media and you know, having heard one story in particular about a young girl in Detroit who had a police officer, a woman no less, not only doubt her story, but brag about how she talked a very hysterical and upset young woman who reported her rape, talked her out of filing a report. Mm. Although she did end up, her mother took her to the hospital, it's a long story, but essentially to see that kind of treatment of victims just really strengthened my resolve that at the very least, because with, you know, we hear stories like that, but then to know that 11,341 people in this community were disrespected. If you know anything about how rape kits are collected, just how invasive that procedure is after you've already gone through a trauma, to go through that and then have your kit sitting on a shelf is the ultimate disrespect. And just as a citizen of this city, I just didn't think I could, you know, not get involved.
Yeah. Kim Trent, I also want to go back to something you just said about your own sexual assault and the decision not to report it. I think it's really important to talk about why you made that decision and how common that is and was, largely because of the culture that you're talking about in the police department.
Yeah, I mean, it was that. It was, you know, when my sexual assault happened, it was, well, I can tell you it was a year actually before the Mike Tyson case. But I remember when the Mike Tyson sexual assault charges happened and just the utter backlash against the woman who reported him. And I remember thinking to myself, thank God I didn't report. So it's the police department. It's the culture. It's in the black community, we should be really honest that a lot of times there's protection of people who are accused of sexual assault. They are, you know, people in our families that we know do things, and we are reluctant. You know, it's a very complicated thing because as an oppressed people, we know that black men have really been oppressed by the police, and we sometimes don't want to contribute. I mean, this is, I don't know if this happens to many victims, but I think just in kind of the larger picture, when we look at the culture and why we're a lot of times more apt to believe someone who's accused, it's complicated. And so just having that as a backdrop in my mind, although I can't say I was thinking clearly, I just wanted it to be over, and I just moved on. And I think that happens with a lot of survivors.
Yeah, go ahead.
That's happened to me as well. We have two women talking to you right now, and 100% of us have been sexually assaulted and not reported.
Right.
I was in law school, and I believed the culture. I believed that if I recorded it, I would be ostracized. I would be shamed. I would be blamed. And I would be, that I felt that my mental health at that time, after as a result of this sexual assault, would hamper my ability to continue in law school and chase my dream of being a lawyer. So I made that decision as well, because I believed the standard fare that I would become the accused almost. And so, and I was in law school studying criminal law and all the other law, and I still had that belief. And it wasn't until many years later when that changed, when I became an actual part of the system. And so that's what makes this so heartbreaking, even still today, 11 years later after working on this, that these women were courageous enough to come forward and report their sexual assault, and then they were mistreated again.
Wow.
So I felt, and the many people that worked with us, you know, Kim Trent and her group of black women, the Michigan Women Forward, the Detroit Crime Commission, the county, all of these people came forward and eventually and stepped up to help. And without all of that collaboration, we wouldn't be here where you are today. But I have to tell you, this whole scenario exemplified the power of black women when they get together to prove everybody wrong and to work together and collaborate to solve an issue. But we had many other collaborators as well.
Right. I'm talking with Kim Worthy, who is the Wayne County prosecutor, and with Kim Trent, who's a Detroit-based activist and communications consultant. We're talking about the backlog of untested rape kits that was discovered in Detroit in 2009. They were sitting in a Detroit Police Department storage room. In the time since then, Kim Worthy and Kim Trent have really led the charge to make sure that those rape kits get tested and that some idea of justice was pursued in the cases where that was possible. The two of them have also been recognized with a pretty important award from the Museum of the Courageous. Kim Worthy, I want to talk about what has happened since 2009 in terms of adjudication of these cases. As you point out, it's not just a question of testing the kits. This was also then a question of going back and determining whether somebody could be identified and charged. There has been a lot of that. I mean, we have an incredible amount of outcome from all of this. Can you talk just a little about what that looks like?
Yes, we, as you know, we had 11,341. It took years and years and years to get them all tested. We started investigating and prosecuting. To date, as of January the 4th, we have 225 convictions. That means 225 rapists off of the city of Detroit. Remember, these all happened in the city of Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
So 225 rapists in the city of Detroit that represents more than that in terms of victims, because many of these rapists that were convicted had raped many women. And so the victim number is much higher than 225. And so that may sound low in 10 years, but again, an incredible amount of work has to take place through investigation, and all of that takes time. So we're very proud of that number. But the other thing I want people to realize is that we also identified over 825 serial rapists.
Wow.
Within that one project, within one city. And so we have a number of those over 825 serial rapists. We have about 50 or more that I call super serial rapists, who raped more than 10 or 15 women apiece. Staggering.
Yes.
The other staggering statistic is that, you know, rapes don't happen. Sexual assaults don't stop at 8 Mile Road in Detroit. They go across our county, other counties, to other states. And so when we had these kits tested and we got CODIS or DNA hits that went to 39 other states. So there were only 10 states in the United States of America that were not impacted by the rape kits that were discovered in one state, one city, and one county. So again, it goes across lines. And also, we have CODIS hits or DNA hits to other crimes, not just sexual assault, to homicides, carjacking, sexual assault, housebreaking, and so that kind of thing. So the impact of discovery of these kits is nationwide and reverberates all the time.
Yeah, I mean,
all because these women came forward and were courageous.
And, you know, I've heard you talk about those numbers before, and each time it reminds me of, you know, the ripple effect of this kind of injustice, right? You don't test a rape kit and you stuff it in a, essentially in a closet, and you know, the pile of them grows up. But each time you're doing that, you are creating this incredible momentum toward injustice. And the things that you're talking about in terms of the people who have been identified and prosecuted, the people who were identified and prosecuted for other crimes in addition. I mean, the net effect of having not taken this seriously is so profound, and just a reminder that we can't let even small things, small acts like this happen if you want to make sure that that criminal justice actually means something.
That's right. Detroit became the kind of the beacon call, because as a result of the work that we were able to do with Kim and our collaborators, you know, we brought attention to many other states. So there are thousands and thousands and thousands of rape kits. It's estimated very conservatively that there were over 400,000 untested rape kits in this country. And we all know the big house at the great University of Michigan, that it holds over 100,000 screaming fans on any given Saturday. And then if you attach a victim to each one of these rape kits, it's enough to fill up the big house four times.
Wow.
So that's
wow.
How pervasive this is. And I know Kim always likes to remind me to talk about that as well. But that's how pervasive we discovered this issue is and still is.
Yeah. Yeah. So I also want to give both of you a chance to talk about what's changed since 2009. I mean, obviously we are not piling up, you know, untested rape kits the way that we were before that point. But have some of the other things that contributed to this actually gotten better? Kim Worthy, I'll start with you.
Well, we had legislation that passed through the results of a lot of people, chiefly Mariska Hargitay, who is the star of Law and Order SVU. Once she jumped in, she charmed legislatures and legislators, and we got laws passed in Michigan. That means that every kit has to be tested now. There had to be an audit of all the kits that were backlogged across the state. Resources then came in from the state, the county level, the state level, and the national level.
Mm-hmm.
So we also now proudly have a system that tracks rape kits that's statewide. And that started with our idea that we said if you can track a package that comes from Australia or any place else in the world that you order off of Amazon or any other mail company, if you can track that and know where that package is at any given moment in time, we ought to be able to track a rape kit through our state system. And so we had it's a long story, but basically we have a tracking system now where victims can come look in there and they can see where their rape kit is, where we can tell if it's still at the forensic nurses, if it's in police custody, if it's at the lab. So we have that tracking system available now. So those are two very important things. And Kim, you can talk about some of the others.
Well, first of all, I just want to back up to you're talking about the law, because that is huge.
Yes.
This will never happen again in Michigan. That is so powerful, that the voices of certainly, you know, celebrities like Mariska Hargitay, but really, you know, and Kim is a very modest person. Kim Worthy is a true hero in this. And because of the work that we did here, other cities we've become a model. We went from being one of the worst cases to being a model for rape kit processing. And I just think that's, you know, so powerful. And I know that within the police department, because of some of the research that you heard about earlier from Michigan State, and because of, advocacy, there are efforts to better train our officers about how they handle sexual assault, which is a really important development. And you know, I just think that, again, having women particularly prioritizing law enforcement's positive engagement with women will have really lasting impact in this community.
Yeah. Kim Trent, I wonder what you make of the cultural dimension of this and whether that has changed much since 2009.
What a great question.
obviously a lot has happened. Obviously, we had the Me Too movement. We've had celebrities who have been imprisoned. So there have been a lot of kind of larger cultural issues that everyone has had to kind of grapple with. Mm-hmm. I think the proof will be in the pudding in how in the future, I'm sure there will be researchers who will examine the Detroit Police Department in the future and we'll know if there's meaningful change in that, in how women are treated by law enforcement. But I think that the culture, certainly, people are more aware of what sexual assault is. There's more recognition of it on college campuses. This idea, of acquaintance assault has been absorbed, and people have a better understanding that if a woman says no, that is, and you have sex with her, you have committed rape. Mm-hmm. I mean, which seems like a really easy concept, but has been very difficult to explain to people over the years. So no, I feel optimistic about it, but then I also recognize it's hard to turn on a dime when you're talking about something that has existed since antiquity. There's always been this idea that a woman doesn't necessarily have agency over her body, and it's gotten better over the years, but I still think that we have work to do.
Yeah, don't get us started on that. And, Kim has been, I have to tell you, Stephen, Kim has been a leading voice. Even now, even with the attention that the work that we have done here received, even though there's been massive changes within the Detroit Police Department, even though Chief White has made sexual assault a priority, and no chief has ever done that before, we still have a lot of backlash when it comes to particularly celebrities that are rumored to be, rapists and child abusers and all of that. People still jump on the bandwagon and still forget about everything that we've learned in the last 10, 11 years in this area. It's very pervasive. It's pervasive everywhere. It's very pervasive in communities of color as well. And just check out some of Kim Trent's Facebook posts on this issue.
Yeah.
But we still have a lot to learn. Even though this attention and this beacon has been shown on this by people like you and Michelle Riley and others, Nancy Caffer and others, we still have a lot of work to do. There's still women every day that are being blamed for being sexually assaulted. Women that have just a hard way to go. Sometimes sexual assault is not even the worst thing that happened to them that day. And we have to embrace these women. We have to embrace, and it's not just men, women, but men and children as well. We need to embrace them. We need to give them services. We need to start by believing them. We need to make sure that they have a place at the seat of the justice table and really take them seriously and not doubt them and make them be the story instead of the abuser. So we still have work to do, but I'm glad that things have changed exponentially.
Okay. Kim Worthy and Kim Trent, really, again, great congratulations for the award and for the incredible work that you guys have been doing on this since 2009. Thanks for being with us here on Detroit Today as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen.
Okay, we're going to come back and talk about another daunting challenge that requires new and different solutions, fighting misinformation and the rampant acceptance of false conspiracy theories. If facts aren't enough to fight falsehoods, could humor and parody be the answer? We're going to talk about a movement based around a fake conspiracy theory that's trying to do just that. Really interesting conversation ahead. Stay with us for more Detroit Today.